All right, we're going to get started now. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Welcome to MMS. Everyone enjoying their first day? Everyone ready for the first day to be over already? Long days, I know how these go. So, welcome. My name is Karma Krinkole. We're going to be talking about the fundamentals of building clouds. So let's start with what this session is and what it isn't, just so that everyone understands what we're going to be talking about, what you can get out of it, no misconceptions, and so you get the most out of what it is we're going to be discussing. So first things first, who are we? Right? There's a long list of speakers. Everyone's going to introduce themselves as they come up. But we are program managers in Windows Server and System Center. I know that really doesn't mean anything. Program manager is a catch-all title at Microsoft. Everyone is a program manager if they're not writing code or testing it. I'll get into a little bit of what makes us a little bit different as program managers go, as opposed to a lot of the people you work with and talk to on the, say, the expo floor. We have a sort of different realm of responsibility. So, our title isn't loaded at all, right? Fundamentals of Building Clouds. We have 75 minutes. How are we going to do that? The answer is we're doing a lot of summarization. I'm not actually going to tell you everything you need to know about building a private cloud, integrating your private cloud with a public cloud, creating hybrid cloud offerings. We're trying to give you the information you need when you're thinking about your cloud projects, right? And the things you have to consider, things you have to put on your plans. It's going to be very discussion-oriented. We're not doing a lot of heavy demoing. We are trying to give you an idea of what you should be on the lookout for the rest of MMS and the kinds of sessions you can go to figure out how you might structure your deployments. Natural reaction is, how am I going to remember all this? Yeah, you're not. It's not going to happen. So we have you covered. We are the team behind the Building Clouds blog that Brad mentioned in the keynote. Our goal in life is to take all of these technologies, get them to work together, and turn them into actual useful bits of technology and knowledge for you, our customers, to use, understand, consume. We blog about our experiences. We talk about them because we're actually doing real deployments for ourselves and for our own customers internally. And we try and turn them into reusable bits of technology. We take our scripts that we write, and we post them to TechNet Gallery. We try and generate as much useful content to you as possible, and we put it all up there. And we're blogging like crazy because there's a lot of stuff to cover when you're talking about clouds. And we know that there's a lot of knowledge, and that's the reason a lot of you are here. What we aren't doing is, like I said, giving you exactly how you're going to build it. You're going to get that from a lot of other sessions here at MMS. That's why we wanted to go early on Monday. We're not going to cover every single nook and cranny of System Center and Windows Server, right? This is very much an architecture and think type session. That said, happy to have some Q&A on these things. We're not holding ourselves to, we're not going to try and fill in gaps here. We're going to speak to our content, and when we're done, we're done. Hopefully, we can give you some time back at the end of the afternoon, last session of the day. I know everyone likes to get out early. So, no promises, but we're going to move on. So, yes, switch to the video. So we're going to give you a quick view of what it is we do and the kind of environment and cloud that we put together and kind of the topics and direction of the inspiration for the topics we're putting in.
Cloud computing model is dramatically transforming IT. Microsoft has built the platform and tools to enable this transformation in your data center. We call this the Cloud OS. The Cloud OS is a consistent and comprehensive set of tools available for use in your data center. To enable business units to consume IT services efficiently, the Cloud OS enables the DevOps model, DevOps drives improved collaboration, communication, and integration between app developers, IT operations, and app owners. As the app owner in the communications business unit of Contoso Corporation, I need management access to our Blog Engine app, hosted in the Contoso private cloud. Using Contoso's self-service portal, I can submit my access request, track its status, and even edit the request if needed. In this instance, my manager has automatically approved my access request to manage the Blog Engine app. To guide me, Contoso's IT operations group has notified me via instant message of the steps required to manage and service the Blog Engine app. My application development team has tested and staged a new version of our Blog Engine app into Contoso IT's cloud management system. Built into a service template, this application can be deployed and serviced as a single object. Businesses spend an enormous amount of time creating the processes and documentation necessary to complete a service update like this. But with this template, the deployment and servicing processes are fast and standardized. A common problem with servicing an app is that the upgraded features sometimes fail. In this case, the search function is no longer returning results. While I engage the development team to investigate why search failed, I need to revert to the known good version of the Blog Engine app to restore this critical service. Now that I've reverted to the previous version, I'll test to verify that the search function has been restored. Notice that my monitoring system has identified and collected the root cause information that my development team requires to troubleshoot and resolve the failure of the search feature in the new version of the Blog Engine app. The private cloud demonstration you've just seen shows how Microsoft's Cloud OS can streamline and modernize your organization's data center. The entire solution is based on Windows Server 2012 and System Center 2012. To learn more, visit aka.ms/private-cloud-demo. And you can follow us online at building_clouds on Twitter or our blog at aka.ms/buildingclouds.
All right. So pretty slick, right? But it's a video. All of that is actually working, running cloud that we configured in actually a very, very short amount of time. And a lot of that knowledge is translated into some of the topics we're going to be talking about for the rest of the talk. And our goal, to help you so use some of that knowledge when you're building and configuring your own clouds. So the format we're going to go in is we're telling this as kind of a light storytelling. Right? We're looking at creating cloud environment as building a house. Right? Components depend upon each other before you build a house. You need to have a foundation before you can build walls. You need walls before you can put a roof up, right? You need to install wiring and plumbing before your tenants move in. Same thing with a cloud, right? You need to have all of those pieces together before you can have a tenant in your cloud. How do you think about those holistic picture? That's what we're going to talk about. So I'm going to go first, and I'm going to talk about the actual fabric that makes up the cloud, right? Infrastructure, old school servers and bits and cables and disks. Charles is going to follow me. He's going to talk about automation, which helps you do a lot of the repeatable tasks that make it labor efficient, right, and less headaches on you. Kat's going to talk about service model, right, how you actually deploy these, and Sean's going to talk about DevOps and integration with your businesses. So let's start at the foundation. Foundation is fabric. First things first, hosts. Everything we're talking about from a cloud model really revolves from a Microsoft strategy standpoint around virtualization. How many people are shocked to hear this? Hands, anyone? Yeah, I didn't think so. But we really can't emphasize enough how all of your operations from a cloud standpoint have to be centered around virtualization. Even workloads you traditionally have not considered. I'm sure many of you people have seen at keynotes and sessions some of the scaling information that folks like Jeff Woolsey have talked about, and the capabilities that Hyper-V provides. Those things aren't just there so we can say, hey, listen, we do bigger numbers with VMs. It's because it really makes it reasonable and necessary to move workloads that you would traditionally consider a physical workload into a virtual environment, even if it means taking that gigantic SQL server and making it one VM on a very large server. Having it virtualized still provides you with cloud benefits. The flexibility to move those VMs, the ability to redefine the storage underneath, migrate to newer storage, change the underlying network setup, all provides real benefit. It's a key aspect of operating with a cloud attitude, right? Just because you use the entire gigantic host with one VM doesn't mean you're not getting benefits out of virtualizing. You should. You should very seriously consider it. The sizing of hosts, that's, you know, all dependent on your the vendors that you work with, what makes sense from a cost standpoint. I'm not really here to talk about that. That's going to be on a case-by-case basis for you. The idea is that your host should provide the level of density that you need. And pardon me. Sorry. And the capabilities that you want. A lot of the newer technologies that Server 2012 supports from a host standpoint come with updated systems. Things like SRIOV, right, come with updated network interfaces, provide higher performance. and it's simply greater VM density, to be honest. I don't really want to spend too much time on hosts, because that's kind of the bare minimum, right? Anything can be done from a host standpoint, including repurposing older hosts. You don't need to think about this as the make or break decision point, right? Go to your vendors and find out what makes the most sense from your standpoint. Where you have to spend more time considering your designs really have to do around networking and storage, and then, of course, management of that fabric. Networking presents challenges that traditionally IT server operators haven't considered their own. Instead, you tend to think of it as the network guy's problem. So how many people kind of have an idea of what software-defined networking means, SDN? Okay, so not very many hands at all. How many people have at least heard of talk of software-defined networking? Yeah, there we go. Almost everyone. So that's one of the challenges we're really here to address, right? It's a wonderful idea, the idea that you have software-defined networking. What does that actually mean? Well, I'm not going to answer that. We got sessions that go into much more detail. We'll give you a much better understanding. What I want you to think of software-defined networking as is when you're designing networks, you really have to think about flattening your management topology for your networks. Don't think of networks as VLANs anymore. You really want a flat network infrastructure where all wires are plugged into the same VLAN, and you're moving management of networks, tenant networks, management networks, virtual switches, up a layer into your management software. That's what Windows Network Virtualization allows you to do. That's what Logical Switches and Virtual Machine Manager let you do. They let you move that network view from, I have to trunk this VLAN down from this core router to these sets of switches into these tops of rack switches and make sure that I have an end-to-end path for all my workloads. And if I ever want to move this production workload over here, I now have to submit a network request to trunk these VLANs. Those are things that do not fit with the cloud model. Because how long is the lead time? How long is the lead time for your network ops to do something like that? How long to move a VLAN or map a new VLAN to a rack? Does anyone get that done inside of a day? Anyone? One person. You have a fantastic network operations group. Either that or you're the network guy. No, okay. You have a good network operations group. Because no one else can do that inside of a day. And that breaks you out of the cloud model instantly. The second you have to interact with the network team, submit requests, and take multi-day lead time, you are no longer able to operate agilely. So flattening that network topology changes how you manage everything operationally. You no longer have to worry about it. It's the management, it's the fabric management that takes care of that. And it provides you tremendous, tremendous flexibility benefits in the long run. Storage-wise, the same idea. Moving away from the model where your engagement with storage consists of having to submit requests, get LUNs back, handle unmasking, decide on the correct connection topology. All of these tasks for something as simple as getting another 2 terabytes assigned to a critical server slow down your agility and make your infrastructure less appealing to your business users, right? This is why they go to Amazon to get their 2 terabytes. This is why they go to Azure to get their 2 terabytes. All of those things reduce the agility of your IT. Flattening storage means investigating new ways of doing storage. You've heard us talk a lot about the new capabilities in Windows Server. Vijay showed some of the capabilities of SMB to keep up with direct attached storage. That's not just because we want to sell a bunch of disks, right? We don't make money off disks. We want to show you the capabilities that SMB allows as an interconnect for critical business. And critical business in this case means Hyper-V, right? Being able to run VMs or being able to store SQL databases directly on a Windows server, reliably know it's there, know that it's highly available, know that you can handle failover, you can scale out to multiple nodes, provides you with a tremendous level of flexibility when you integrate it. Converged storage and network fabrics mean you can flatten your management structure to, instead of figuring out all of the different switches, managing storage and management VLANs, you now have a set of 10 gig NICs. And they provide everything. And you can apply QoS policies to ensure that you're getting the appropriate bandwidth for your storage, the appropriate bandwidth for your management, the appropriate bandwidth for your workloads. And it also frees up you operationally from your VMs having to live in a certain place. So I'm going to tell you something interesting, right? How many people who are dealing with virtualization have heard of virtual fiber channel, right? Virtual fiber channel capabilities in Server 2012. A lot of people are excited by that, right? It's very useful, particularly for high performance needs. I'm going to tell you that in the cloud model, I really don't want you to use it. And it's not that I don't want you to use it because it's unreliable or it's bad or it's slow. It's not. It's none of those things. It's fantastic. I don't want you to use it because it reduces your cloud flexibility. When you use something like virtual fiber channel or direct attached disks or pass through disks to a VM, all of a sudden that VM is now tied to a different fabric. You can't move it ever out of that data center, right? The data disks that are attached to it don't go along with it. You might not even be able to move it to a different host cluster because then you'd have to make sure that the fiber channel fabric can see the same SAN. So all of a sudden, you've reduced the mobility of that virtual machine by taking advantage of it. When you use something like SMB as the store, you may sacrifice a couple of percentage points, and by a couple I mean 1 or 2, you know, maybe 5, of performance, but you open up a whole realm of operational flexibility for yourself. You can migrate VMs easily between clusters. Not inside of a cluster, between clusters, while it's running, live migrated. Because everyone has access to the same infrastructure. It's all very comfortable management techniques. You're managing ACLs, you're managing SMB. Without any sacrifice in performance, or without a serious sacrifice in performance, there's always a tiny little bit of overhead, but it's not enough, in my opinion, to outweigh the operational flexibility. Operating in the cloud model means I shouldn't have to worry where this VM is inside of my data center. It shouldn't have to only be in this rack because this rack is connected to the appropriate SAN. The second I do that, my flexibility is decreased. Same thing with a lot of other technologies that perhaps tie the system more closely to a smaller set of hardware. Finally, the control and deployment. So the control and deployment really is about System Center. System Center is handling deployment of workloads into the fabric and controlling the management of that fabric, right? It's the only way that logical networks, network virtualization really makes sense. It's very difficult to do this on a host-by-host basis. I would say virtually unmanageable. Right? It allows you to set up the principles that allow the next stages that we're going to talk about, automation and service management, to be built. Right? Giving your base fabric management control, or System Center base management control of your fabric, allows easy automation to happen so that complex tasks can happen across this environment, so that you can build interesting, complex service offerings and enable your users for self-service. Right? Otherwise, you have a very flexible and competent fabric that no one can consume. Not really what you want at the end of the day. The other challenge that goes along with this, of course, it's very easy to say that it's important to have System Center, but System Center is a very challenging product to deploy. How many people have deployed one component of System Center 2012 SP1? Okay, almost everyone. How many people have deployed two or more? Okay. How many people deployed four or more? Oh, wow. All right. Excellent. And have you integrated them all? How many people have integrated all of them? All right. These are the war-torn people. You can see the smirks on their face like, yeah, okay, but I didn't really like it that much. Deploying it is still challenging, particularly when you're trying to integrate it, particularly when you're trying to be agile. Right? Learning all these components and understanding how to install and integrate them is difficult. So we've actually worked very hard at trying to take a lot of that work off your shoulders. One of the projects that our team did, or specifically Rob Willis, the guy who was in that video you saw, is he created a deployment mechanism for System Center SP1 that we're calling PowerShell Deployment Toolkit. All it is some PowerShell, some XML, and a lot of hard-earned personal knowledge to make this all work together. We make it publicly available up on the blog. You can download it. You can customize it. We try and explain exactly everything that goes on with it so that you understand how it works. And it will let you deploy all of System Center very quickly and easily in very complex configurations along with their integration. Meaning, not only can you just install it, it's not just dropping a bunch of VMs in. It's you want to point it at this set of physical servers. You want to have clustered SQL instances. You want to have multiple management servers. That's just another line in the XML that we manage. It's not as easy as double-clicking and answering a couple of questions. It's a lot easier than clicking next 700 times. Was that?
No, sorry.
No, sorry. I wasn't sure if there was something happening. Makes it very easy to get all of System Center installed so that you know where you're going. So, going to cover a couple of sessions that I want you to think about if you're interested in learning more about all these topics. The breakouts. I cannot emphasize enough how much I want you to go to Rob's session, and not just because he's my teammate. If you have System Center deployments going on and you're concerned about getting them configured and installed quickly, or if you have to do them repeatedly, if you're a partner who works with customers and you want to be able to deliver System Center quickly to them, PDT is your friend. You want to know how it works. Go to Rob's session. It's worth your time. There's also some fantastic storage stuff. We have some of the best storage people at Microsoft coming in here to give sessions. Jose Barreto, Hector Linares. Common storage scenarios with VMM, with Hector. File storage strategies for private cloud is with Jose. He's going to go very in-depth into how to manage and create scale-out file server clusters with SMB3. Tremendous level of knowledge that he can impart. And then, of course, we have how to design and configure networking with VMM and Hyper-V, which I believe is going to be given by Vijay, who you saw at the keynote this morning, if you were here. And Greg Cusanza, who's one of the PMs for that feature. Right? These are probably the two best people you could want to learn more about network virtualization from. And they have a two-part series, which tells you how serious this is. Because it's very difficult to get one session in MMS, let alone two. and then finally, we have a couple of labs that go along with this. And then, of course, Birds of a Feather, where you will almost certainly find us if you want to chat with us. Highly recommend these sessions. Now I'm going to hand over to Charles. He's going to talk a little bit about how to build automation on that infrastructure.
Thank you, Carmen. My name is Charles Joy. I'll be taking you through the next bit. I do want to pause for a second and go back to a slide that Carmen flipped over, but I spent so much time building it out.
Sorry, Charles.
That's all right. So we're telling the story as building a house. I drew a picture on my Surface Pro and then broke it into puzzle pieces for this. It's kind of a lame picture, but I wanted to show you all the pieces jumbled up because we're building them out as we go along. Fabric was the first part. Now we'll jump to my part. So just as a side. So now that piece is in place, and you understand everything you need to know about Fabric. Well, as much as Carmen will tell you. And with that reference list, you thought you could leave really early, but we got some more stuff in here for you. So the next piece is automation, as we have those four main pieces we're going to talk about. I'm going to talk about orchestrating the cloud. In fact, I almost had a video done and a blog post about orchestrating the cloud, but I didn't finish it this weekend, so I will finish it this week, and it'll be out, and I'll blog about it. And it'll be sort of everything you see I talk about today, and then some. So let's talk about automation, what it is. It's the unsung hero. You saw that video. You saw Rob was in it. You saw the portal. You saw all this front-end stuff, Link and everything. But what was behind all that? You didn't see that. You didn't see the workhorse or the hours it took to build the runbooks and test the runbooks. So it is the unsung hero of the data center, automation in general, whether it's PowerShell or Orchestrator. Well, you got to start somewhere. If you have the fabric, you have the foundation, you got to know, and there's a little bit of planning, obviously, before that in the house scenario, because there's blueprints and everything. But you have to have a process. And what I always say is, if you do not have a process, you're not ready to automate, because you do not want to automate just, maybe I'll do this, and maybe I'll do that. So we had to start with a process, and that's where we gathered requirements, you know, based on business needs. And for this, you know, and how we're going to talk about this, I gathered requirements from Kath because she was going to build out the service request and metering stuff. So, and they sort of, you know, intertwine with each other. So that's where I got most of the information. And that's why I'll be passing the torch to her once I'm finished. So from there, we have the process. And then we need to transform that process, that theory, into reality. And this is where I say you have to actually sweat the small stuff. You have to know every little bit of technology you're going to deal with. We threw Link in there because email was taking too long, just because of refreshes or whatever. It was unreliable that we'd get it in a timely manner. So we threw Link in there. So I had to learn the SDK for Link with PowerShell and integrated with Orchestrator. I didn't know any of that beforehand, so I had to learn that on the fly. So I had to sweat that small stuff. And that's just one example of the things that I had to deal with the Orchestrator runbooks. The main three things, though, that I'll show you briefly in the demo that I'm going to do are the three main things we do in SE Demo Cloud, that demo, the behind-the-scenes demo that we showed the video of in the beginning. Provisioning, giving a person a cloud or access to a cloud. Deprovisioning, taking that away and getting rid of all the stuff. And then maintenance tasks, to include rebuilding services based on service templates that, you know, may need to be rebuilt, or servicing them back to a good known state if they were left in a state that we don't like. So those are the three main things. I'm not going to do all slide. I do have demo, so don't worry about that. So as far as provisioning is concerned, we have the self-service request. We do cloud and user role assignment. We do the app URL that you saw, the blog engine there. We warm it up. We send a notification. We do a whole bunch of service delivery stuff. Hundreds of automated decisions, logic and error handling, and other moving parts are part of the runbooks that I'll show you. They all come out with one result. The customer, or whoever's getting the demo, or whoever's doing the demo, is provisioned a set of resources for the private cloud, the public cloud, and the hosted cloud. So that's the provisioning aspect of it. Deprovisioning, a little easier, just rip that all away. So, and then I'll show you some of the maintenance stuff. So I'm going to switch over to the demo environment. All right, this is the end part of where they click go. And Kath, if you could please click next on
just
that
click
form.
Here?
Just click next, yeah.
Okay.
And then please click submit.
Okay.
They have orchestrated Kath. If you can tell. No, that was a joke. Really thought that would. But no, thank you very much for doing that. What I wanted to do is kick the demonstration off. And let me pop over to Orchestrator because someone was pleased. So if anything, a demo, an automation demo with me just showing you static runbooks is not very interesting. So I wanted to show you, at the very least, there'll be a little green arrow up there. So that's another joke, but it's fine. So this is the runbook that's being initiated via Service Manager, and she's going to go into that more in depth. What I'm going to talk about is the process of the provisioning that we're talking about here. And this should kick off from that web portal via Service Manager, Then we capture some information in Service Manager. Then I'll get actually a link pop up here in a couple seconds. No, I won't, because I'm in presentation mode. Do not disturb. Let me change that. Hopefully I won't get any disturbing link messages. So I may have missed that opportunity, but that's fine. I'll show you what we capture. There it is. So all of that happened. I didn't do anything. She pressed the button. In fact, I did absolutely nothing for this. So now I have all this information that was gathered. Everything you see in this link message came from Service Manager, was passed from the connection, through the connection, through this object here. So activity GUID is something on the back end, customer name, username, and the service request title. All of that, or some of that, is leveraged in this link message. And I also got an email to my phone and, obviously, inbox with this information. You could see MMS 2013 session demo and the customer's you. And then I have a list of instructions. I'm not going through the demonstration. I just wanted to show you that information was automatically gathered, and I was able to put it into a link message via the runbooks and automate that. We tack that on. We also send the email, like I said. I could do just about anything I wanted to as far as notifications are concerned. So I mentioned we warmed up the blog engine URL. So if I actually clicked on that URL, as opposed to it just being sitting there forever, this should load fairly quickly, and it has. So if I go to a different one that's not been warmed up in a while, it will take a little longer because IIS has to do its thing and all that. So that's one of the reasons we baked that into the runbook. We didn't, that's something we wanted to make the experience better for the end user. These are the small things you figure out as you're going through the process. This is the power of automation. If you have a little kind of, that's irritating because it takes 60 seconds, you might be able to, let it take 15 seconds so you can solve that problem with automation. So what I'm going through right now is what we created for this SC Demo Cloud deliverable. But let's show you some of the results. You can see the runbook. But I'm going to just quickly pop into App Controller because it shows some of the power that the automation provided. Now, because I was provisioned into user groups for both App Controller and Virtual Machine Manager, I get the option to choose from that. I'm also an administrator, so that's why I get the choice. If I didn't have the choice, it would just log me in as user 001. But let's take a look at what I've been scoped down to because of the automation. I have access to one of the 50 private clouds. I have access to one of the 50 public cloud subscriptions. And once this loads up, I have access to one of the hosted Contoso clouds here. All of that was done via PowerShell, orchestrated by Orchestrator. And that's sort of what my video blog post will be about later in the week on, more information on that. But without automation, someone would get the request in their desk and they go, okay, now what I need to do? I need to go into VMM, I need to right click, I need to go here, I need to add that person. All of that would have taken a lot more time than it took for that link message to be sent and go, here, you've been provisioned all this good stuff. So that's the provisioning aspect of it. I'm not going to dive too deep on here. If you want more information about what we're doing here, come by our booth and I'd be happy to walk you down to the PowerShell, lines of PowerShell, if you're really that interested. Okay, so deprovisioning, I want to quickly show, since I want to clean up after my demo anyway. So one of the other things was nice. We wanted a way for whoever's demoing this to end early, so we had to build the automation around that. So luckily, we had a user input thing here. So the instructions are to type complete in here, hit update request, and then I have a runbook on the back end waiting for stuff like that. And every 5 minutes, it goes and gets all the SRs that have comments, sees if the comments are correct, that say complete, because they could be demoing something else, and then it'll start the deprovision process, which is actually more involved than the provision process and involves more provisioning than the provision process, because the provision process really just assigns a user to a user role, which already has access to a bunch of stuff. the deeper vision actually will get rid of all the stuff and make sure everything's cleaned up and resurface that that private cloud app that we have that I didn't touch. So in a couple moments, all of these steps will happen, and then I will lose access to, obviously, App Controller once that goes through, and then I could provision myself a new set of clouds and whatnot while it's being while this is in process. So that's the deprovision. Again, I'll be happy to walk through this in depth if you come to the booth. And then as far as maintenance is concerned, we have a bunch of things that I built out as part of the whole process. So if we needed to delete all the clouds and all the services at once, I have a runbook to do that. If we needed to reprovision all of them, like from the service template level and put them all out, I have a runbook to do that. I have some test runbooks, like when I was starting to do Link, I needed to test the notification. Same thing with Exchange. Some setup runbooks. Right from, like, we have the fabric, we have VMM installed. How do I just automatically put 50 clouds up there and then automatically populate those clouds with, associated with the user roles? I have runbooks for all of that stuff as well. That's where the power of the automation comes in. So let's see if I've lost access. Not yet, but I will. It hasn't gone through yet. But so that's essentially the three main areas of the automation pieces for this, and I'll go into any more depth as you want if you come over and stop by. So what I want to leave you with before I transition to Kath is another dive-in slide. We have a birds of a feather. A couple of them are very apropos to this lesson as far as automation is concerned. I have two breakouts. I'm going to give I'm not ashamed just to talk about them. I have an orchestrating Azure and System Center 2012 that's kind of misnamed. It should be orchestrating Windows Azure with System Center 2012. So that's my Azure session. I also have a Hyper-V replica session. Learn more about automation and the power that it can provide you in the data center. We've got some labs out there. And then, look, there's a session about Orchestrator and Service Manager there. So take a look at that, and obviously you could download the slides and whatnot. So that's the third piece of the puzzle, or second piece of the puzzle. Boy, I'm getting ahead of myself. Can't be next to each other. So that's the second piece of the puzzle. I'm going to hand it over to Kath, turn my microphone off, and thank you.
Okay, we've talked about a lot of stuff so far. We've got Fabric. There's a lot to build there. Carmen's given you a very high-speed walkthrough of that. We've talked about orchestration and what we can do with Orchestrator, how we can build these runbooks. Who's going to let their users hook to those and just run stuff? Yeah, I don't expect to see any clouds. The last thing you're going to do is allow your users to hook to any of that stuff. What you want to do is you want to provide a front-end portal where they can get those resources that they need. So I want to talk a little bit about self-service and metering, because ultimately what you're doing is you're providing a service to your customer. Your customer is the user. They need to get into this environment and get those things that they require. Am I right? Okay. One of the things we want to know about our environment, when we've got something that's this volatile and this changing, is we need to know every single thing that's occurring in it. So what virtual machines are out there? Who's using what? What applications have been deployed? All the information about the environment. And we get that through the Configuration Management Database, Service Manager. It's going to provide us that. The beauty of the CMDB is it's going to automatically provide us that information. It's got connectors into these other products. Carmen talked to you about Virtual Machine Manager. There's lots of really good information in there about what's been deployed. We can pull that into the CMDB automatically. We can see who's doing what in the environment based on their users. We can see how they're hooked to different clouds and their utilization, things like that. So that pulls into the CMDB. We can monitor it. Sean's going to talk to you a little bit more about that. That's Ops Manager. So the CMDB plays a very, very important role in clouds, because they change so rapidly that if you try and go and do checks and balances yourself, you will never keep up with those changes. Okay? So, definition, what's self-service? And when you think about it, you kind of think that's easy, but it's not quite as easy as it sounds. So self-service is all about being able to serve oneself. Okay, so now I'm Mr. User. You gonna turn me loose on your environment? I can go serve myself, get whatever I want? Absolutely not. What you're going to do is you're going to provide self-service with restrictions. Here's what you're allowed to use. Here's what you're allowed to have access to. Here's how much of it you can have. I am the world's worst. If you give me access to an environment, I will use all of it. I guarantee you I am going to use all of it because there's something else I want to play with, there's something else I want to build, and I will take up that entire fabric architecture that Carmen has built. So you need to restrict me. And we do that through this tool set. Now the other thing about self-service that's important is understanding what we want to give our users. What services are we providing? What is it that they need? So here's the fun part. Now you got to talk to the business. What is it that you guys need on a daily basis? If I'm going to provide you access to virtual machines that you can deploy at will, and you don't need that, what have I provided you? Maybe the developers need that, but why would I be providing that to somebody that doesn't need it? So now I need to scope what I'm providing. And I need to be very aware of who's using what within the business, so we have to have those conversations. Now that said, I may be a business owner, and that whole demo that you saw is based on a business owner. And he has started with an organization, and they are now responsible for a service. We call it Blog Engine. So I need to be able to get at that and manage it. Do you want me getting at everything else too, or do we need to provide security boundaries? So these are all the sorts of things we have to start thinking about when we're providing self-service. So what are the touch points we've got to be worried about? And this is a short list because it gets much, much longer. Okay? I've just based this list on some of the things. Service managers, the self-service portal. We need to start thinking about that. What is it that we're going to provide? How are we going to group these? How are we going to restrict people? Not everybody needs access to everything. App controller. You saw that quickly. If I have virtual machines or services and I need to upgrade them, manage them, how am I going to do it? That's another user touch point that we have to be worried about. So how am I going to configure that? What am I going to present to my users? Application diagnostics. You're going to see that shortly. How do I know if my application's working correctly? And by the way, if it's not working correctly, what's wrong with it? And how do I get that information to the right people so that they can resolve it? Because it's not a good service unless it's running well. Some of the other things, the orchestrator portal. So although you're not going to let everybody wander through orchestrator in those workflows in your organization, there may be people such as Tier 1 Help Desk, Tier 2 Help Desk, that you will give access to those workflows through a web portal. Are we going to do that? Are we just going to allow them to go in through Service Manager? Maybe what we want to do is we want to have everybody go through Service Manager because we want to track everything. We want to know about all those service requests, who's asking for what, who's got permissions, and build in the rights that we provide to get them into things. The Operations Manager portal. Not everybody needs to see the errors that are going on. So we have to be concerned about who's got access to that. And this is all about designing these services that we're providing. And then the service management portal, the Azure Cloud Services for Windows, and the Service Provider Framework. I got it out without a mistake. It's a big word, big bunch of words, but it's a portal that would allow us to work with the provider framework and do some other things. So those are some of the touch points. As you saw, there were more. There was Link. There may be Exchange. There may be another email client within your environment. But we have to start thinking about those. So we have to define things like user requirements. And this becomes important because if I'm going to offer a service, I need to know what the service is, what all the information that I'm going to put on the portal about this service is, what workflow it's going to hook to, and what questions I want to ask. Because there's always questions I need to ask as I'm handing out these services. Maybe it's the title of the request. Maybe it's the group that you're part of within the organization. Many, many different things that we might need to ask. So those are used to collect the data. Sometimes we're just asking questions because we want to report on it. So maybe we got to talk to those guys that need all the reports and say, what do you need us to capture? Okay? So the setup for this whole thing is actually a big process. And when we built that little demo environment, it took quite a while to figure out all those questions and things that we need to do. So once we start building this into System Center, we have a number of steps that we have to go through. We have to connect to Orchestrator. So what's that look like? We have to have service templates. What are those? Service manager templates. What do those look like? We've got request offerings. We've got service offerings. What do those look like? And by the way, you can customize that portal. Do we need to do that? So again, these are all the different sorts of questions that I went through as I was building this out with the rest of the team. And then there's this whole thing about metering. When we've got a cloud, we need to know who's using what our resources are, and we have to decide if we're going to do chargeback or not. Now, in our organization, we may decide that we don't want to do chargeback, but we may want to do showback as a stepping stone to getting to the chargebacks. So we want to start thinking about that. So within System Center, we can get chargeback information from multiple locations. Virtual Machine Manager. We've got visibility into Cloud Fabric. So we can use that information if we choose to. From Operations Manager, we can see who's using what and how they're using it, what the resources are that are being used, what the monitoring looks like for it. From Service Manager, as I mentioned, the CMDB, that's where we put all the information. And the one little secret about this CMDB that you got to know about, it's automatic. Anybody ever deploy one of those other CMDBs? It's out of date as soon as you're done. Okay? Because it doesn't have the level of automation. I apologize, I've got a cold. So our CMDB that we're using here is automated. It's pulling in that information for us. And then we've got the data warehouse. That's where we provide all our reporting. This is what some of our metering dashboards can look like. This is the information that you can provide back to your management on how this private cloud is being used. What's going on with it? Those are in the box. Okay? If you don't like what's there, we give you the ability to build upon this and build your own reports. You can extend it. You can put this into dashboards. Make it available. Anybody got one of those big screens sitting up in their data center where they like to have the dashboards? You can do that as well. So I want to go to a demo. I want to show you some of the things that I ran into as I was building this and some of the steps that it takes. Now you get to see if I can get my password right. First try. That's not too bad. Okay. Charles handed me this runbook. So that is my starting point when I'm building this out. Now keep in mind, I've gathered all that other information. I understand exactly what we're trying to accomplish with this, what it's going to look like when we're done. And I'm actually going to fire up the Service Manager portal here and just let it sit in the background so I can get that running. So this becomes my start point. This is what I have to connect to from Service Manager to make this whole thing work. So how do I go about that? Well, let's go over to Service Manager. If I can get the mouse to work. And in Service Manager, I actually set this up and I did a search. I got a huge number of runbooks in my organization, massive number of runbooks, because we're doing all sorts of automated things. And we're allowing our users to make requests that have automation behind them. Okay? So I found that one that Charles sent over. And there it is right there. I've created a connector that hooks from Service Manager to Orchestrator, automatically pulls in this information for me, and makes it available. So there's a number of different ways to do this, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to select Create a Runbook Automation Activity. And I select it from there. I know I've got the right runbook. I don't have to search for it. I take this and I provide a title for it. So I'm just going to call this MMS for now. And it's called a Runbook Automation Activity Class. And then I put it into a management pack. And I store it in a management pack. So in Service Manager, like in Ops Manager, we have the concept of management packs. And that's where we store everything. For this automation activity and this request offering, I have it in one pack. Do I put everything else in one pack? Absolutely not. I keep my pack separate because if I want to make changes or if I want to remove things, I don't want it to impact anything else within my service catalog. So let's go back over here and take a look at the sort of template that it creates. Now, if I remember right, there we go. I have two templates here. So that first step is going to jump me into a template where I have my runbook information. So similar to that right here, I've already got the one that I already created. Okay, you don't want to watch me type, I'm not very good at it. So the first thing we notice is the title. Consistency. If I can tell you one thing, consistency in naming through this. If you start changing the names of these templates as you go along, good luck finding it. As you get more and more of them, it will get very, very difficult to find the one you're working with. So I have a standard when I build them. This is a runbook activity. I call it a runbook activity. It's for create VMM. Okay? Or create VM. You can put in all sorts of information. I do recommend descriptions. The area. So what area is this impacting? And I can pick from the areas that are available to me. Now, because this is Service Manager, and Service Manager is very extensible, you can add to that through a list. And no, you don't have to write code, and you don't have to tear apart the product. You simply go into the administrator section, and you say lists. You find the right list group, and you add to it. And you give it what you need. I can set the stage. And there's my runbook. Right, now, the first thing I want you to notice, when this came across and I got this runbook, it didn't quite look like this. This top option here was actually mapped to a text field. So why did I change it? Why did I move it from a text field? Text field should work. That's what it said up front. No. For me to be able to go back in and keep that mapping built out so that when Charles is working with that workflow, he can hook back to that ticket and the service request and update it, I needed to change that. So I had to change it to map it to the property ID. And it was as simple as clicking on this, runbook automation activity, and select ID. Now I've linked them together in such a way that as we move down through the process and different steps take place, we're hooking back to the same information every time. So my favorite gotcha. Has anybody worked with these runbook automation activities? Has anybody ever forgotten to click that little button there? You know what happens when you forget to click that and you save it? You start over. Because when you go back to it and you try and click it and save it off again, it's a template. It doesn't update. You've already created the template. You've told it it's not ready for automation. If I can give you one piece of guidance, building these labs, I was working most of the night. These guys know that. I don't know how many times I missed that little checkbox. And then I would speak highly of myself for a few minutes, and I would go back and rebuild it. Always before you save this, if you want this thing to be automation ready, check that checkbox. So once I save this off and I get this completed, my next step is to create what's called a request template. And again, it's very, very similar. As you can see, here it's a service request. I'm putting it in the Building Clouds Management Pack, storing it in the same location. And you're seeing, again, that consistency in naming. And I'm putting in the information that I need here. Now, this is where it gets fun, because this is where we build in the activities. So what are activities? Well, maybe I want managerial approval. Maybe I want to have a number of different steps or activities take place as part of this runbook or part of this service request hooking to this runbook. We made it simple here. This is a demo environment. I've got two steps. Okay. First thing I want to do is I want to hook to the runbook. Second thing we wanted to do was we wanted to hold it open. Right, so we've got these couple of steps in here to do that. Once I get this done and save it, I'm not done yet. So I've created two templates. Now I need to hook it all together, and I need to turn it into, excuse me, part of my service catalog. So the first step to that is to create the request offering. Now I bet you know what I'm going to type in here. There it is. There's one of my service offerings, okay? Within here, and this is actually a different one, but within here, what we've created is the information that's required for the request offering. And if it will open, I'll show you the sort of information in here. So again, this is a wizard. And I'm following this process exactly. Pull your runbooks over, create your two templates, and then you do this step. So here we're subscribing to Cloud Resources. Again, I highly recommend descriptions. This is a slightly different one, so I've got it in a different pack. We've got these things called user prompts. Remember I said we had a bunch of questions that we needed to be concerned about, those pieces of information that we ask our end users? This is how we configure those. So we set up these different prompts to get the sort of information that we require so that we can make sure that on the front end we've got that. Okay? I can walk down through, we map the prompts, we capture all that information. Ultimately, once we get done that, we create a service offering. And the service offering is that thing that is going to be published on the front end that my end users are going to see. Here you're seeing a variety of them that I have. So if I go into Data Center Cloud Service, if I remember correctly, this is one of my offerings that I've got. Now, in here, I provide the information, but I also tie in things like related services. Here I haven't put any in, or knowledge articles. And then my request offerings. And I can have multiple request offerings under a service offering. I get this and I publish it. Don't forget to publish them. It just doesn't work well if you don't publish. Ultimately, here's where I end up. So the environment that Charles showed you a little bit earlier was simplified. This is a little bit more indicative of what one of these might look like. And there's our different offerings there. This is what shows up. Now, that seems like a lot of work. I have one last thing to mention to you before I turn over to Sean. Anybody heard of Cloud Services Process Pack? Awesome tool that you can download, import into your private cloud, and it's going to give you virtual machine management right away. It's going to give you the ability to create tenants, give them rights, and then they can create virtual machines. It's going to do some of the heavy lifting for you. It's a great way to get started. On that note, I'm going to turn over to Sean, and he's going to talk about how we go from there.
Thanks, Kath. So, what is all this for? I think one of the things that we kind of alluded to in the beginning is sometimes there's applications involved, right? That's what we're trying to serve up to our end users. Actually trying to give the end users something to use. So once we have the infrastructure, we've got our fabric, we've got some of the self-service, what we have to do is we have to take into consideration what sits on top of that. How are we going to take these pieces and serve them up? That's through app management. Now, trust me, I'm painfully aware that I'm the last thing in between you, a beer, dancing, and anything else that you have planned tonight, so I'll try to make this quick. So, what are some of the focus areas we need to think about with app management? Well, pretty straightforward. Two things that we're trying to do, and we're trying to do quickly, is we're trying to deploy our applications, and we're trying to deploy them quickly in a repeatable, dependable, and consistent fashion. Need it repeatable because most applications change. They don't live a single life, right? So our development teams are changing them, modifying them, adding features because the owners are asking them to. The other thing that we're really interested in is resolving problems with these applications once they're running in production. Right? Sometimes maybe resolving them before they get into production. So we'll talk a little bit about both of those two things. First question comes up when you're building a cloud. How do I do these two things? Well, we standardize the deployments using service templates. When you're taking into consideration, what am I going to do with a service template? What am I going to do with this application? And how am I going to change the process? You need to look at, what are you doing today? How are you getting applications handed to you today and you're deploying them? Is it something you're just handing a virtual machine over? It doesn't really have to change. We create a service template for that model. Is it some way that they're giving you scripts or they're giving you files that you're uploading? It doesn't really have to change completely. We'll take those scripts and files and that methodology and we'll import it into our service template methodology. So I'll go a little bit into that, show you some of the places that you can get more information on that through this week. But as you saw in the presentation in the very beginning, one of the weakest areas of an application deployment is at the time of deployment, right? That's change. That's when things can break. So that's the weakest point. And we were monitoring that application during that change. I've been in environments where I've been part of a deployment team that we've taken a week set aside to deploy a new code, new changes, new features. So we're all available. We're on call. I was on the development side, so I was on call for these in case there were challenges. And then what would happen is if there was a break, we're like, well, what did we do wrong, right? So it's the very first thing that I used to say is, well, what did you do on the IT pro side? Because I know my code's great. Used to have that sign above my desk, my code doesn't stink. So actually, that brings up another question. How many developers are in the room? One or two? Quick question for you. How many developers does it take to change a light bulb? None. It's a hardware problem. I've been on both sides of the fence. I got promoted, moved over to the other side in IT Pro, and I became the guy that, okay, I knew what was wrong with the applications, kind of, because I wrote it. And then I started seeing what was taking place in production, and it's usually a change problem, right? They were testing and building on a different infrastructure than what we were using in production. We were taking what they were giving us, taking documentation that they were giving us, taking components they were giving us, and putting onto our production-style systems. How much could I have alleviated if I gave them production-style systems or those same service templates to build on, to test on? Maybe that's one of the services we offer. So we offer to them some of the same capabilities they're getting in the public cloud now. Developers are going to the public cloud so that they can get infrastructures and get setups pretty quick. Maybe we offer that to them, so I'll show a little bit of that. But we're going to offer that with a lot more detail. We're going to give them monitoring capabilities as into what is your application doing internally, what's your code doing, what's the timing, what's the metrics, what's the application failures. So while they're testing, they're getting real-time metrics. And then we can turn around and take that data and capacity plan for the future. How's this going to run? Because they're running on systems just like I have in production. So let me show you a few things that I'm going to be putting up on the blog that we talked about earlier, and you'll hear us talk about that quite often. So what I've done is I've gone through and decided as a developer, what kind of system would I want to develop against? Well, most of the time, if it was a single line of business web application, I needed a web tier. I'm usually building something that might scale out, so maybe I needed a scalable web tier. So in this service template, you see I've created a web tier that's scalable through a load balancer. I also need a SQL tier. It's a very straightforward sysprep SQL. Set up all the configurations inside the service template. Now, this is a redeployable service template. Over and over and over again, can it be requested and deployed? There's no applications on it. This is the infrastructure we might have set up for production. This might be the way that we want to run apps in production. I want to offer this up to the other side. Right? They're going to be allowed to build and test against their applications on this system. Maybe I'll do a one-tier, or maybe I'll do a three-tier app, or I'll offer different versions. Most of what they needed to do has already been automated inside of the service template. So if I go into the properties of the web tier, the service template's going to allow me to make some kind of pre-approval processes. What network will this be attached to? Maybe what naming convention will we use for these as they get deployed? Maybe how will IIS be configured for it? What kind of .NET components or what time of features are going to be added to it? It's all pre-approved and ready for whatever deployments they need. Any changes or customizations that we normally have, we might do through scripting. And from the developer side, they're going to do things the way they used to do them, or the way that they're already trained to do and they're doing. They're going to publish applications. They're going to build them through Visual Studio. They're going to connect up to the system after they make the request and the system's deployed, and they're going to push their applications out to that. The one change to that process we might pull back is we might say, now, once your testing's complete, there's two things I need from you. I need a deployable package, which in IIS is almost as simple, or it is as simple as right-click and export. So I need my deployable package that I'll put in my VMM library, and I will attach to this type of template for production requests. The other thing that I need, the web test. How are you testing that application through those processes so that I can then attach that to my operations management monitoring and I can confirm that it is acting the way that you say it's going to act through that synthetic transaction over and over again? Those are the two things that I need. Now, of course, we might be revamping the process of application deployments as they exist now, but you can see the benefits behind that. When they change the code, what do I need? Two things. Deployable new code application, new deployed zip file, new web test for the features they deployed. Put those into the library, just like you saw in the video, they'll make the request to make the change. If the change fails, just like in the video, they can roll it back. Real world, that's about a 5-minute process. So the weeks that I used to spend working through that process, especially when they were failing processes and we had to gather data, now breaks down to that 5-minute time period. What kind of information do we gather from these applications? There's going to be a lot of sessions on those. You'll see that while monitoring applications, I'm looking at two main things inside the application for problem resolution. Lots of other things, but two main things. Performance of the application. Is it responding to what we say it should respond? We didn't use any magic to go out and get the data. We used the tests that they had already set up and were running. We used the systems they were already testing, and they gave us the metrics. We also have human nature, right? And I throw this out for monitoring systems and users. How often do you use a website and you know when the website's slow? Quite often, right? We know as a human when it's slowing down and it's bothering us. So we know what that metric should be for anybody else that's using our published applications. So you know those metrics to some degree. So we gather that data. We offer that data back to the development team in different ways. As you're triaging the problem, you can now go into the console and actually send the notifications off to the development team, or you can actually even assign them in their own Visual Studio environment. I'm all about DevOps. I've been preaching it for as long as I've been in the IT industry before it was even called DevOps. It's simply collaboration between the two. This is almost anti-DevOps because you don't have to talk to them, you just send it, right? But what it is, it is an automated communication. It's gathering the detail that they now have access to, and they can drill into the depth of the code or the problem that they need to solve. This is actually a stack trace for an exception in the code. It was automatically collected. The developers didn't have to do anything. They didn't have to change their code. They deployed it to your systems that you provided them. Now, this is an additional value add you're offering them. I've been on the developer side. If you offer me a few clicks to get a system spun up, and you promise me you'll give me this data for my test and production systems, I will not pay anybody else for that. I will stick with you and serve all my applications through you. Guaranteed. So I know that this is a couple of important topics, and I want to make sure that you spend a little bit of time and go to a couple sessions that are going to highlight these. So let me bring them up. I think it's Thursday. The session on top is one that I'm actually participating a little bit with that's actually going to talk about these technologies underlying. So give you the conversations that you can take back to your development teams and offer them the same information that you're getting here. Another thing that I want you to do is, if you can and you remember, please do, go out to that blog, sign up for notifications, because I'll be posting these service templates. I was supposed to post them this week, but you can see I'm a little busy. So hopefully it'll be next week, and you'll actually be able to download the service templates and get up and running instantly on some of these. So I know we are out of time, but you can see we completed the house, right? That's really the end result. That was the whole design, the whole process. Do you have a question?
I don't have a question. I was going to handle the Q&A part because we didn't leave people much time.
Sorry.
I was going to wait for you to finish. Are you done?
I am done. So now we'll take care of the Q&A.
All right.
I apologize.
So obviously we didn't leave much time for Q&A.